A word about this morning's parsha, about the story of Noah and a related story. First of all, if you looked at the story of Noah, and you know as a cultural symbol the way it's treated, you realize that there's a certain discontinuity there. That is, I mean, the other day in our religious school, we had a petting zoo because of the story of Noah. So the kids all went around, and in honor of the destruction of the world, they petted goats. But really, even though the pictures are all like Sesame Street, the story is more like Hieronymus Bosch. That is, it's a terrible story of the destruction of the world, and you never encourage kids in religious school to make pictures of drowning people and animals. But that's actually what the story is really, in some sense, about, and it makes you wonder, what is that doing there? Because it gives a fairly awful image, not only of God's character, but also of the history of the world. So one way, at least, to look at it is, you know, literary critics spend a great deal of time trying to boil down what stories are really about and extracting the details, which tend to detain us, to distract us, and looking at the underlying structure. And there was a critic of the last century who said, essentially, there are only two kinds of stories, and every story you know will fit into one of these two models. One is a stranger comes to town, and the other is a man goes on a journey, or a person goes on a journey. And the truth is, in some sense, the two are even one. Every story is a person goes on some kind of journey. If there's no journey, there's no story. And if you start to look at underlying structures as well as details, then it strikes you, if you read the Bible, that the Noah story is the flip side of another story that you also know. I know, I got you nervous, because now I'm going to mention a Bible story. You're not going to know it. I said that you know it. You should know it. And you're going to flunk on Saturday morning in synagogue. But you do know this one a little bit, and that's the story of Jonah. The story of the guy who gets swallowed by a whale that's really a big fish. Okay? You don't need to know more. If you know that, you're already okay. So the Noah story is God thinks the world is wicked, destroys the world, one guy is good, takes him and his family and all the animals and puts them on the ark 40 days, and then the flood stops, and eventually Noah repopulates the world. The Jonah story is there's a city called Nineveh, which was an Assyrian city, and if you know, well, I was going to say, and if you're familiar with your ancient Near Eastern history, then you know that the Assyrians were the most hated people in the ancient world. It was the Assyrians who invented population transfer. When they conquered a country, they were the first that we know of in recorded history that exiled all the people so they would never be able to rebel again. So people in the ancient world hated the Assyrians. The Assyrians were the ones who conquered northern Israel and spread the 10 lost tribes till they were found again in Salt Lake City. That was the Assyrians. So even in Jewish history, the Assyrians are considered not good. And God comes to Jonah and says, we want you to speak to this Assyrian city, the capital Nineveh, and tell them to repent because they're bad, and Jonah doesn't want to do it because he doesn't want them to be saved. He wants them to be punished. So he runs away, and he ends up on a boat. There's a storm. The sailors eventually throw him overboard because he's clearly the cause of the storm. I'm skipping some details, but this get the idea. He's swallowed by a fish that saves him, spits him up on land. Eventually, he realizes he can't run from God, says six words, and all the city of Nineveh repents and is saved. Now, you'll notice all the similarities. There's a storm. There's a sea. There's a boat. There's salvation. There's God's doing, but in one case, and by the way, if that's not enough for me to convince you that the two stories are tied together, what bird does Jonah send out? Does Noah send out at the end? A dove. And how do you say dove in Hebrew? Yonah. Jonah. Jonah means dove. So if I haven't convinced you with everything else, a little linguistic affinity, and that ought to clinch the deal. But here's what I think the point is. Jonah and Noah are the same story with a different ending. People acting wickedly, being threatened, and in one case, being destroyed, and in the other case, being saved. Both of them, I think, are supposed to be parables, right? You're not supposed to think it's literally the case. If you ever saw Inherit the Wind, you know this, but if you didn't, you should. It's an old movie, but a great one. It's not supposed to be literally the case that you imagine that there was this guy in the sea and a fish came along and swallowed him and then spit him up. And I don't think you're supposed to think literally God actually sent a flood that encircled the entire world and destroyed every animal, except presumably for fish. But in one case, a threat is made and people don't repent, and in another case, they do. In other words, the message is what saves you is goodness. No matter how wicked you have been up to now, because the Nineveh is picked as the exemplar, the paradigm of evil, actually, you can change. And by changing, you can save. That's what the promise of the rainbow is supposed to be. What does God say as a concluding word to this? God says, I will never again destroy the world. That's the promise of the rainbow. But there's a chilling omission in that sentence. What does God not say? God doesn't say, you will never again destroy the world. In other words, it's in our hands, both then and with the development of all sorts of technology and weaponry and unchanged human hearts, it's in our hands now too. So it may be an old story, but neither of them have lost their message. And with that, let's bring everybody in.